Matthew chapter 24, and in Matthew chapter 24, Jesus, after predicting the destruction of the Jerusalem temple, which would have been an extraordinary prediction in and of his day, the disciples asked the question, when will these things be, and what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age? Now, initially, that sounds like three questions, but it's actually two. When will these things be? In other words, when will the temple be destroyed? And then what will be the sign of your coming, the end of the age? Because the disciples automatically assume that the destruction of the temple would usher in the end of the age and the coming of the Messiah. So Jesus is answering these two basic fundamental questions. Now, most interpreters of Matthew chapter 24, well, I don't know about most, but a lot of interpreters take sort of what I call a popcorn interpretation of these verses. They say, well, Jesus is speaking both about the future and about the past. He's speaking both about, he's speaking either about the Jerusalem, the siege of Jerusalem and the downfall of Jerusalem in 70 AD, or he's speaking about the future and his second coming. And so they take passages here, and they say, well, Jesus is speaking about his second coming here, but is speaking about the destruction of Jerusalem here, and they sort of popcorn things around based on where they're going to go. But I've taken more of a linear translation or a linear interpretation of these particular verses, and I've tried to show that all of these verses, up until Jesus says in verse 34, this generation will not pass away until all these things take place. I've tried to show that there is a way to interpret everything that Jesus has said before verse 34 as happening literally within the generation that Jesus was speaking to. In other words, the coming of Christ, or the coming of judgment on the nation of Israel and Jerusalem when Jerusalem was destroyed, and then Christ, his heavenly ascension, ascension and being enthroned on his heavenly throne in verses 29 to verse 30, relate to the first part of the question, when will these things be? Now, from here on out, the second part of the question is going to be answered. And the reason you know that is because there's a dramatic shift that takes place in verse 36. But concerning that day and hour, no one knows. Concerning that, and that grammatically and in every other way, you can tell Jesus is changing subjects. And when he changes subjects, what's he doing? He's answering the second part of the question. Not when will these things be, but he's answering the question, what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age? And pretty much all Bible scholars are agreed at this point. Clearly, this is what Jesus is referring to. He's referring, at this point on, he is referring to the second question that the disciples ask regarding the end of the age. And not only does he answer that question here at the end of chapter 24, but he also answers that question on into chapter 25, where he tells several parables that teach us about how to respond to the end of the age, how to be prepared for that coming, the end of the age when Jesus comes and establishes his kingdom forever and ever. And we'll look at chapter 25 in several parts, starting with next week. But for now, we're simply looking at the end of chapter 24. And he's answering the question, again, what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age? And I have five things that Jesus describes what that day will be like when he returns and brings us all to himself and establishes his kingdom. And here's the first one. What will that day be like? That day will be, first of all, it's going to be visible. Now, he doesn't say that right here in this particular text, but you remember from 2 weeks ago, he did say that in verse 27 of chapter 4. For as lightning comes from the east and shines as far as the west, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. In other words, Jesus is saying that the coming of the Son of Man will be like lightning. And if you've ever been out in the middle of a lightning storm, nobody misses it. Everybody sees it. Everybody knows it's there. You can almost, not only can you feel it, you can almost, or see it, you can almost feel it when lightning strikes. And so Jesus says, my coming will be like that. Now, in verse 27, though, he's answering that question in the context of false messiahs. See, he's warning the disciples that there are going to be many false Christs. There's going to be many false messiahs who are going to say, I'm the Messiah, or the kingdom is here, or now is the fulfillment, or now is the end. Says there's going to be many people that are going to say that, but I want you to be careful because they are false messiahs. The reason is, when I come, you'll know it. when I come, nobody will miss it. It'll be pretty clear. It'll be plain. Nobody's going to say, hey, did you see that? Did you miss that? And, oh, I missed that. Nobody's going to miss it. And so the coming of Jesus, he has already told them, is going to be visible. It's going to be seen by all. So that's sort of, he sort of set that up earlier. Now, when we get to verse 36, he begins to unpack that a little bit more. Not only has he said that his coming is going to be visible, but secondly, he says that his coming is going to be unpredictable. Unpredictable. Look at verse 36. Concerning that day and hour, no one knows. Now, there's a real powerful translation here with these words. And you know what it means when it says that no one knows? It means that no one knows. It means that there isn't some smart Bible scholar somewhere that has read the Bible uniquely for the first time, and somehow he has calculated when Jesus is coming. So he knows, but nobody else knows. That's not what it means. It means no one knows. In fact, Jesus goes on to say that not only does no one know, not even the Son knows. And I'll talk about that in just a minute. But I was reminded when I read this verse. In fact, I did a quick internet search of all of the false prophecies, of all of the false predictions of when Jesus were going to come. There are hundreds of them. There are literally hundreds and hundreds of them, of people who stood up and said, Jesus is coming back on this particular day. For example, October 22nd, 1844, there were probably, some people estimated there were as many as 100,000 Christians that gathered on hillsides, they gathered in churches, they gathered in houses and homes all throughout, because they were absolutely convinced that Jesus was coming back on October 22nd, 1844. A guy by the name of Miller, William Miller, who was a New York farmer and a Baptist layman, had been preaching actually for some time that Jesus was going to return in 1843. He had this rather elaborate scheme arrived from Daniel chapter 7 and chapter 8, and he had calculated the dates so precisely, and he was preaching, was evidently a rather dramatic preacher. He drew a lot of attention. A lot of people wanted to know when Jesus was returning, and he was pretty convinced that Jesus was coming back in 1843, so he went around preaching that, and then Jesus doesn't come back in 1843, so he goes back and he recalculates the day of Christ's return, and he's absolutely convinced. Now it's October 22nd, 1844. And so Miller takes all of his people and he instructs them, and they all get outside and they stand outside and nothing happens. October 22nd, 1844 became known as the Great Disappointment because Jesus did not come. And while we laugh at that, I remember in the 1970s, there were lots of books that came out by prominent pastors who are still leading churches today, preaching and teaching and whatever, and they were absolutely convinced in these many of these books in the 1970s that Jesus was coming back as early as 1981. In fact, if you read Hal Lindsey's book, The Late Great Planet Earth, that was his whole thing. He tied the coming of Christ back to the establishment of Israel as a nation in 1948, Israel is established as a nation. So, obviously, Jesus said within this generation, and the nation of Israel was the fig tree that was going to bear fruit. So that meant that Jesus was coming back within 40 years. But then you had to subtract 7 years for the tribulation. So it came out to Jesus was returning in 1981. And then they said, well, maybe we were wrong, because maybe what it meant was that Jesus was returning 40 years after the establishment of Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. So we were wrong about 1981. So if we do our other calculations, it's now the year 2000. Well, Jesus hasn't returned yet. The reason is because no man knows the day or the time. Perhaps one of the more blatant and one of the more recent apocalyptic proclaims was done by a guy by the name of Harold Camping, who's sort of this eccentric Bible teacher, who predicted that May 21st, 2011 was going to be the end of the world, that Christ was going to return. And he was so convinced, he took $5 million of his company's, of his nonprofit organization's funds. They bought billboards, put them up all over the country. They bought trucks and painted the panel trucks and painted a big sign on them to tell people that May 21st, 2011 was going to be Judgment Day. And Judgment Day came and went on May 21st. And so then Harold Camping came back the next day and he said, you know what? Jesus did come on May 21st, but he came in a spiritual sense, so we didn't see him. But he did come, and what's going to happen now is on October 21st, 2011, Jesus is going to come back in judgment, and the earth is going to be burnt up, and we're all going to be destroyed. So the whole thing went on again for October 21st, 2011, and Jesus didn't return. Finally, in March of the next year of 2012, Harold Camping humbly acknowledged that he had been mistaken, that his attempt to predict the date was sinful, and that his critics had been right in pointing to the scriptural text of that day and hour knoweth no man. Evidently, Jesus was right all along. No man, no man knows the day. So if someone pretends to know the day, if someone claims to know the day, you need to be highly suspicious, because Jesus said, even I don't know the day. Now, that verse has caused some problems, too, amongst people, because how could an omniscient God, Jesus is God in the flesh, right? So how could an omniscient God who knows everything not know the day of his coming, not know the day of his return? And a lot of people are sort of disturbed by that. But oddly, I mean, it's one of those powerful text, you know, if it wasn't true, Jesus wouldn't have said it. You know what I'm saying? Or if the Bible was made up, it's one of those verses that you really wouldn't put in. Because it's so odd for Jesus to say, no man knows the hour, the angels don't know the hour, even the Son, even I don't know the hour of my return. Why would Jesus say that? Well, I don't know if this is the right way to look at it or not, but I was just thinking the other day of that there are certain things that I choose not to know in life. For example, when I was a little kid, my parents always had Christmas presents, you know, that they were buying for me, and I knew where they hid the Christmas presents. I knew if I went to a certain closet that the Christmas presents would be there. And if I went and looked and searched enough, I could find out what I was getting for Christmas that year. But I never wanted to know. In other words, I always wanted to be surprised. I wanted there to be joy and surprise and all that sort of stuff. So I was never all that excited about going and discovering what my Christmas presents were going to be. In other words, it was a willful. It isn't that I couldn't have found out. It was that I didn't want to know. Christmas had more joy for me by being surprised. And I think Jesus' lack of knowledge in this particular category is a willful lack of knowledge. It isn't that it's particularly being withheld from him, but he doesn't want to know. He wants the date to be a surprise, sort of like I wanted to be Christmas, to be a surprise in terms of what I was getting. He wants it to be understood that the day of his coming is unpredictable. No one can predict it. If Jesus himself can't predict it, how can you predict it? How can anyone predict it? It will come in an unpredictable way. Here's the third thing he says. It will come unexpectedly. Look at verse 37. It says, For as were the days of Noah, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. For as in those days before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage until the day when Noah entered the ark, and they were unaware until the flood came and swept them away, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. You know, in Noah's day, people didn't say, oh, there's going to be a flood, so we better not get married, better not have a family, better not think about too much about our future because the end of the world's coming. You know that. And people weren't saying that. They were getting married. They were going on as they had always done. They were, they were going to the parties. They were having a good time. They were getting careers. They were going there. The idea of a flood coming to destroy them was the farthest thing from their minds. And don't think they didn't know that a flood was coming, by the way, because Noah had been building an ark for some time. In fact, the Bible says that it took Noah 100 years, because God speaks to him when he's 500, when the flood comes when he's 600. So for 100 years, Noah is building an ark. It's pretty obvious to them that something, it should be, that something is coming, that the end is coming. In fact, Peter calls Noah a preacher of righteousness, sort of like while he was pounding the ark nails, that very action was reminding people that judgment was on the way, that God was going to bring a flood, that there was going to be destruction. But nobody thought about it. Nobody paid any attention. And so people went on with their life as they were. Noah didn't even know when the waters of the flood were coming until 7 days before, when God tells him, now's the time, you better start getting into the ark. And so God gathers Noah and his family into the ark, and then the flood rains come. And by then it's too late. It is unexpected. That's the way it was in Noah's day. People were going about their business. It will be about when the day where Christ comes, people will be going about their business. They won't be taking the day off from work. They won't be saying, oh, it's the end of the world. I don't need to worry about that test tomorrow. They'll be studying for tests. You know, I used to always, when I was in school, pray for the second coming right before an important test. I thought that would be the most appropriate time for Christ. But it ain't going to work that way. It's just the life is going to be like it is, and all of a sudden, things will be different. Jesus will return. There's another interesting thing about Noah's day. As it was in the days of Noah, so will it be in the days of the coming of the Son of Man. And that is that in the days of Noah, there was great wickedness in the land. In fact, that's why God was bringing judgment in the first place. In Genesis chapter 6, verse 5, God says that the Lord saw the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intention of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And so God said, if I allow this wickedness to continue in this world, it will destroy humanity. It will destroy all of my creation. So I'm going to stop it here and start all over. Because people were exceedingly wicked. And many people have looked at these texts and said, not only will this catch people unaware, but the coming of Christ will come at a wicked time in history. And that's why I think, in some respects, why many Bible teachers and scholars are so anxious to pick the date, because they look at the wickedness in their day. They look at the sin and immorality that has been prevalent, really, in every culture. And they say, surely Christ will come and set this all right. And the truth is that one day he will, but no one knows the day. It will come unexpectedly. So that day will be visible, first of all. That day will come will be unpredictable. Secondly, it will come unexpected. And fourthly, it will come and bring sudden separation. Sudden separation. Look at what verse 40 says. Two men will be in the field, one will be taken and one left. Two women will be grinding at the mill, one will be taken, one left. In other words, people here again, people are going about their daily businesses. They're going to work. They're going to the fields. They're going to the mills. They're doing what they normally do. But then all of a sudden, Christ comes in a visible way, and there is separation. One is taken, and the other left. Now, the mystery in these verses that we really don't have a clear answer to is, who is the one taken, and who is the one left? Is the righteous person, because what is going on here is there is a separation between the righteous and the unrighteous. Just as Jesus tells this parable in a little bit about the faithful and unfaithful servant, at the end, when he comes, there is a separation between the unfaithful and the faithful servants. And there's going to be many parables speak about the separation that will take place at the end of the age. And so the question is, all right, who's the one that's being taken? Is it the unrighteous person being taken, or is it the a righteous person who's being taken? Because keep in mind, at the second coming, Jesus is coming into the world. I know there are various theories about what happens when Christ returns, but I think the Bible teaches that when Christ returns, he returns. There it is. That's the end of the age, the end of the world. When he comes back to establish his kingdom on this earth forever and ever. Amen. And he establishes the new heavens, the new earth. It's all here. So when Christ comes, he's coming back to establish his kingdom. You would think the people that would be taken would be the people that aren't going to be here for all of eternity. They're the people who are going to be judged, people who are going to be cast into the lake of fire. But there are other texts that suggest, for example, 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, that when Christ returns, he will be seen coming in the clouds, and he will gather his children to him. But in the process of gathering all of us to him, where is he taking us to? He's not gathering us to him and then taking us back to heaven. He's gathering us to himself and then establishing his kingdom on this earth. So 1 Thessalonians 4 describes the resurrection of the bodies. When Christ returns, Well, let me just read it. For we declare to you by word from the Lord that we who are alive, who are left until the coming of the Lord, will not precede those who have fallen asleep. For the Lord himself will descend from heaven with a command, with a cry of command, with the voice of the archangel, with the sound of the trumpet of God, and the dead in Christ will rise first. Then we who are alive or left will be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air. And so shall we always be with the Lord. But that's a description of the resurrection of the body. The bodies that we put in the grave when we bury the believers, the saints in Christ, the bodies that are put into the grave are resurrected. The people are, who have died and have gone with Christ are given their new bodies. Those of us who remain on the earth will be given our new bodies as well. We will be with Christ, but we're given new bodies so that we can live forever on the earth in the eternal state, and so that our bodies will never die, so that the earth will never fade away. And so Jesus is coming, and when he comes, he will come and establish his kingdom. But there will be, the point he's making is that there will be a separation. Some people will be left, some people will stay, some people will face judgment. Some people will face eternal joy. And perhaps that's the fifth thing we could say then. Not only will this coming of Christ bring a sudden separation, but fifthly, it will bring judgment. And that's what some of these parables talk about, in particular to the parable of the unmerciful servant. We're going to look at that in just a minute. But the point is, when Jesus comes, there will be a separation between the righteous and the unrighteous. There will be a separation, as he says in chapter 25, between the sheep and the goats. Or in other parables, he talks about the wheat and the tares. The two are going to be separated. And just because you're good friends with, I've heard people say, well, we get together every Tuesday morning in the men's group, at the Dutch Corner, and we have a little breakfast there. And there's another group of men that get together every Tuesday morning, too. And they're always joking that they want some of our religion to rub off on us. They say, "Yeah, we need some of that stuff to rub off on us, So you guys, because they know what we're doing, we're over there having a Bible study and praying." But the truth is, at the coming of the Christ, that's not how stuff works. It doesn't rub off on you, and then you get to go to heaven. Just because your father was the preacher, or just because your grandmother was a godly woman, or just because your best friend is this great Christian person, it ain't going to make a bit of difference when Christ returns. There's going to be a separation between the righteous and the unrighteous. You're going to stand on your own faith. You're not going to stand on somebody else's. Judgment is going to come, and it will come at the end of the age. We'll look at that in just a minute. So here are the things of what that day will be like. It will be visible. It will be unpredictable. It will be unexpected. It will cause sudden separation, and it will bring judgment. Now, what is our response to all of that? Because that's the next thing that Jesus begins to talk about when he shares his parables. And there's really two responses that he has. Here they are. First of all, we need to stay awake. That's the parable he's talking about in verses 42 to 44, the parable of the thief, because he says, "Therefore stay awake, for you do not know on what day your Lord is coming. But know this, that if the master of the house had known in what part of the night the thief was coming, he would have stayed awake and would not have let his house be broken into. Therefore you also must be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect it." That idea of Jesus coming as a thief in the night is a theme throughout the scriptures about the second coming. He will come unexpectedly, when we least expect it. Therefore we need to stay awake. Now, the question you could ask yourself is this: if I don't know when Jesus is coming, how can I be prepared for his coming, right? That might be one question you could ask. But you don't need to know when the day is coming for you to be ready for something to happen, do you? I mean, you may know that your wife's going to have a baby sometime around about here, but you don't necessarily need to know the exact day in order to know that you got to get the nursery painted, and that you got to get the bags packed, and you got to get everything ready to go. You can be prepared without knowing the certain day is coming. How can we be ready for the coming of Jesus? Well, in one way that we can be ready for the coming of Jesus is that we can be in a constant understanding that day can happen at any particular time. In other words, when you got up this morning, did it dawn on you that this could be the day that Christ returns? After all, I mean, he's, He's coming unexpectedly. He's coming in an unpredictable way. This could be the day. Did you get up today thinking that this could be the day Christ comes and establishes his kingdom on this earth that calls you to himself? You know, it could be. What would that change about you if every day you got up and you had that thought? What would that change about what we do with our money, for example? If we have, you know, I have so much money and I have so much money in the bank, and yet today could be the day where Christ is coming. And after Christ comes, I can't spend the money then. Obviously, that's not going to do me any good. How would that affect our finances if we looked at it that way? How would it affect our time if we realized that today could be our last day to serve God in this particular way on this earth because Christ is coming? And when he comes, he'll give, you know, he'll require an account of me. And I have the opportunity today to you know, to go minister to a friend or to go minister to a neighbor or to go serve somebody, or I have the opportunity to watch 3 or 4 reruns of Gilligan's Island. And, you know, how would the reality of Christ coming affect my decision if I thought about it in those kinds of terms? Or how about my relationships? How quick would I be to reconcile with someone that I realize I might never see again? Or how quick would I be to share the gospel with someone that I might realize I could never see this person again if Christ returns? Because there is coming a day of separation when the righteous will be separated from the unrighteous, when the sheep will be separated from the goats. If I began to live in the reality that Christ could come back today, wouldn't that change all of my behavior? See, to be ready is simply to live in the reality, to live in the thought that Christ could come today. That's all it means to be ready. And as a result, we make decisions and we do things based on what Jesus has already told us to be true, because he can come today. He could come before we get home. How would that reality affect my worship even this morning of him today? Jesus says to stay awake. And to stay awake means to live in the reality that Christ could come at any moment. But here's the second thing he wants us to do in order to be prepared, and that is he wants us to be faithful. Who then, in verse 45, is the faithful and wise servant whom his master has set over his household to give them their food at the proper time? Blessed is that servant whom his master will find doing when he comes.